Hi, I'm Karan Saxena, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM broadcasting from the unceded land of the Musqueam people from UBC's Point Grey campus in Vancouver. This is Forgotten British Columbia, a series on the history of the province that has been erased and those that have been forgotten. Today, we're going to talk about Hogan's Alley. A brief content warning, this episode contends with the displacement of Black communities in Vancouver, institutionalized anti-Black racism, and police brutality. So for those who might find it distressing, you might want to come back to 101.9 in a few minutes. Others, we encourage you to listen. There has been a Black community in Vancouver since before there was a Vancouver, said Wade Compton, a Vancouver-born writer who co-founded the Hogan's Alley Memorial Project in 2006. Hogan's Alley was the neighborhood of the downtown east side by Strathcona that was home for many immigrants, but mostly Black people. A Black community had established itself at the T-shaped intersection, being so close to the Great Northern Railway Station, employing many Black men as porters. This was a thriving community of working-class Black Canadians, which then fell prey to urban rezoning for the Georgia Viaduct Replacement Project in the 60s. Being the subject of debate about its status as a slum since 1929, the city of Vancouver did not deem Hogan's Alley as a residential area.
Hogan's Alley was a T-shaped alley. The north-south part ran parallel to Main Street, and then it T'd right where the Georgia Viaduct is. So from Main all the way to Jackson Avenue, between Union Street on the north side and Pryor on the south. Hogan's Alley was not a Black-only neighborhood at all. It was where Italians in Vancouver traced their origins to as well, and it was right on the edge of Chinatown. But it did have a cluster of Black businesses and institutions in the church that were significant to the Black community and some residential areas.
When a working-class immigrant space like Hogan's Alley was regarded as a place mired with social ills, people had different ways of dealing with it. For Hogan's Alley, it was urban reform.
Vancouver has accepted the challenge, knowing that to build a better city requires only the industry and ingenuity of man.
Urban reform started to decimate communities across North America in the 60s and 70s, specifically poor and communities of color, under the guise of improving city life. Neighborhoods like Hogan's Alley started being talked about as diseases, often using the terms mold and blight to refer to them.
Most of Vancouver is kept strong and healthy through the normal process of land and building renewal. But in areas such as this, nothing happens except dilapidation and decay gets worse each year. Property values fall, and blight is the result.
While questions about the Georgia Viaduct project were hidden from the public, a social planner from UBC, Leonard C. Marsh, recommended in a proposal to the city that the Strathcona district, including Hogan's Alley, which Marsh called a slum, be completely destroyed and redeveloped. North American obsession around car culture began to force freeways. But of course, the freeways would not dare be built close to powerful neighborhoods. Cities began enacting urban reform with slum clearance in Black communities and Chinatowns, both of which were under attack in Vancouver. Before the city began expropriations, most of the Black families had left the area. After the viaduct projects had wiped out most of Hogan's Alley by 1967, community opposition stopped the remaining parts of the plan, saving Chinatown. For Black Canadians, Hogan's Alley was more than a neighborhood. It was their community, a place where they found home when the rest of the city was unwelcoming towards them. In fact, the first Black church in Vancouver was founded by Nora Hendrix, the grandmother of the famous musician Jimi Hendrix. Black churches, juke joints, famous businesses like Bai's Chicken and Steakhouse, and the Pullman Porters Club, all demolished for an elevated highway. In a CBC interview in June 2020, Stephanie Allen, the co-founding board member of the Hogan's Alley Society, said that Black Canadians did not find community again like they did in Hogan's Alley. This was out of fear of being displaced again, out of fear that they would be overpoliced and racially targeted, which Allen called survival mechanism. Hogan's Alley Society says that city councilors should understand the importance of a cultural enclave that Black Canadians need and how these spaces are not meant for private profit, that the city should commit to a community land trust and not just make hollow statements on anti-Black racism after the killings of DeAndre Campbell, Regis Korchinski-Paquette, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and Ahmaud Arbery. For Allen, a community land trust would mean 70% below market rent and 30% market rent with no private ownership. She says that this is merely to ensure housing for people to have joys in their lives, all the while addressing homelessness, racism, the unjust criminalization of poverty, and over-policing of Black people.
A community land trust is a way to put the community members in control a little bit of their destiny, to have a say, and to really prevent that kind of gentrification or displacement that has impacted so many lower income and Black communities.
Canada might have seen a significant shift in its zoning schemes, but the policies still target immigrants, refugees, and low-income folks. Zoning projects like the one demolishing Hogan's Alley punish the working class by limiting their ability to find affordable housing, let alone home ownership in the real estate fiasco of Canada. You'd think that we've come to a point where housing would be regarded as a human right, but that's still a far-fetched utopian concept, or so they say. Meanwhile, the aftermath of such atrocities will be ongoing, through the loss of culture, community, safety, solidarity, and a place to call home. As advocates and activists continue to fight for reparations for those that were harmed by such systemically racist policies, which were meant to displace and dispossess people, we should continue to counter the narrative that Canada has ever been better than other countries that were built upon genocide, especially when it comes to the settler colonial governance structures of Canada. Such a thought process is dangerous and revisionist in nature, and only ensures a pathway for history to repeat itself, something that advocates like Wade Compton have actively tried to combat. Today's episode was written and edited by me, Karan Saxena. It was co-produced by Hannah Imam and Karan Saxena. The music for Forgotten British Columbia is produced by Cronfused. You can also listen to the show online by visiting CITR.ca and looking up Forgotten British Columbia. Thanks for tuning in.